While a lockdown was going on, WA Environment Minister Stephen Dawson signed off environmental approvals for several contentious projects. Can you talk to us about what those projects are and why the Conservation Council is concerned?
Yeah, well, it was actually on the day that we were all going into lockdown that these announcements were made, and they weren't even really announcements at all because the government hasn't issued any press releases or any statements about these approvals, but they do appear on the website of the EPA.
Welcome to Understory this 10th day of February 2020. Independently investigating the environment as we do each week, I'm Elizabeth Poe. Understory's Adrienne Glamorgan is speaking to the Conservation Council's director, Piers Verstegen, about environment decision-making in Western Australia. To make significant pollution announcements on a busy news day almost risks the story being overlooked. While people were queuing up for lockdown supplies in supermarkets, the Environmental Protection Authority, the EPA, made two major announcements on its website.
And there you can read that there's been approvals given for two major new gas projects here in Western Australia. And these are pretty contentious projects that Conservation Council and a number of others had been engaged with the EPA and the appeals process trying to challenge because of the very significant impacts they would have, not only on the climate, but also on other environmental considerations. Our primary concern, of course, with any fossil fuel projects and gas projects, certainly a part of this, is the carbon pollution that comes from not just extracting the gas, but also then processing it and eventually burning it for energy. And these projects together will produce about 50 million tonnes of emissions between their direct emissions, scope one emissions, and the what they call scope three emissions, which are the pollution that arises when the gas is burned. So that's 50 million tonnes of added pollution that we don't need. We've already seen that West Australia's emissions are increasing as a result of other gas industry activity. And the government's made a commitment to get that down to achieve net zero emissions by 2050. And that really means we need to be cutting our pollution immediately. But instead, these projects will take us in the opposite direction.
So the government has promised to deliver on zero emissions. But it's so far in the future that no one has to take responsibility for action for another seven terms of government.
So it's a little bit like a smoker trying to, you know, say that they're going to quit cigarettes and eventually, you know, in 20 years' time, they won't be smoking any. But in the meantime, we'll just actually smoke more cigarettes.
It sounds like they're buying by the carton, saying at least it's cheaper.
Yeah, there's a bit of an element of that. And I think, you know, it's not going to be too long, I hope, at least before these kinds of gas projects and fossil fuel projects become completely uneconomic, just not economically viable at all. So there is a narrow, I think, window of opportunity for the gas industry to expand further at the moment while it can still sell these fossil fuel products. And, you know, the gas industry is certainly looking to exploit that to maximise their profit. Unfortunately, that comes at the expense of our environment and our climate. And we're just reminded of that with the bushfires that we've just seen in the Perth Hills, of course. The pollution from these projects is just going to increase the severity of climate change and cause more of those kinds of extreme weather events. So we don't think it's a responsible set of decisions for a government to be approving new fossil fuel projects that increase the state's pollution.
If there are environmental and economic reasons not to approve gas projects, surely the government gives scientists and conservationists the opportunity to provide the minister with evidence?
Well, I just want to focus on process because the environment minister gave these approvals just before caretaker mode. Did the environment minister, Stephen Dawson, consult with the environment movement in a more direct way to check whether or not you were comfortable with this approach to climate change?
Well, it hasn't been the approach of the Environment Minister over the last couple of years, actually, to consult directly with the conservation sector or experts or scientists directly on these issues. Having said that, he certainly knows what we think about it, and there was a lot of expert evidence submitted through the appeals process. There were scientists that made appeals, there were landholders and farmers that made appeals, raising concerns about the impact of climate change on their farming businesses, the potential for the Waitsia project, for example, to give rise to a gas fracking industry in the Midwest. And certainly we submitted a lot of science in relation to the climate change concerns that we had, and also legal advice from the Environmental Defenders Office and others that were strongly making the case that under Western Australia's environmental legislation, the minister and the EPA had responsibility to ensure that pollution doesn't rise any further. So the minister is well aware of our views on these things, but he's also under a lot of pressure, I suppose, and influence from the gas industry. And we've seen, of course, that there's been a pattern of repeated meetings directly with the gas industry between the minister and the premier and others in government. They've been making a lot of political donations, not just to the Labor Party, but of course to the government in particular.
Maybe it's because the minister hasn't heard the arguments. Perhaps if the environment movement could meet with Stephen Dawson to show him the climate implications.
I gather that the Minister for the Environment, Stephen Dawson, declined the Conservation Council's invitation to speak at a climate change panel recently. What would you like to see happen in the next term of government, whoever's elected? What sort of relationship do you think that West Australians fairly expect of their democratically elected environment ministers?
Well, look, our preference is always to work with the government and to work with particularly environment ministers to build consensus in the community about the need to take action on critical environmental issues, whether that's climate change or protection of wildlife and biodiversity, and to work together in doing that. And certainly, you know, there's examples where the conservation movement has worked in partnership with government to achieve some really fantastic environmental outcomes. There is even some examples of that within this government, and the, for example, the 5 million hectares of new conservation estate, the Plan for Our Parks initiative, that was built from a long-term campaign that the conservation groups ran to build community consensus around the need for increased protection. Unfortunately, that's not the approach that we've really seen from Minister Dawson, and particularly not in the area of climate change. I think it is a fraught political issue in a state like Western Australia, where we've got very powerful interests from the fossil fuel industry that wield such power through our media outlets and you know, have various ways of influencing government. But nevertheless, I think it would be it would deliver much better outcomes for our community if there was a closer dialogue between the Environment Minister and the conservation groups, not just the Conservation Council. We represent about 100 groups across the state. There's many more than that even. And really, they tell us that it's very difficult to get meetings. When they have got meetings, there's an element of hostility there, and the minister seems to see our sector as a threat rather than an opportunity to work together to get good environmental outcomes. So that's a bit disappointing.
So if talking to the government doesn't work, environment campaigners have to head off to court.
It means we have to find different ways of trying to influence the government, and in some cases, you know, as we've done recently, actually commence legal proceedings. The approvals were given last year for the Burrup Hub expansion, another gas expansion which should produce a lot more pollution than the ones that we've just been talking about. And those approvals were given, in our view, without following due process, without environmental impact assessment. And our efforts to resolve that with the government didn't reach any conclusion. And at the end of the day, we've had to commence legal proceedings against both the state government and Woodside. So, look, that's not our preferred approach to advocacy, but certainly that's what we will do and what we'll have to do to defend our environment if those opportunities aren't available to us to to work in collaboration with government ministers.
Conservation Council Director Piers Verstegen is talking to Understories' Adrian Glamorgan about the state government giving the cold shoulder to the environment movement and their relaxed approach to enforcing environmental safeguards.
That court case around the Burrup Peninsula and the damage to the climate and Aboriginal heritage is probably going to be fought on procedural grounds. How does that compare with, say, French courts recently finding President Macron negligent in his application of climate change controls?
It's a really interesting point. And look, different countries have different judicial arrangements and different legislation that allows their courts to consider different things. In Western Australia, when we bring these legal challenges, and we've done so in the past with things like the Yeelirrie uranium mine and other projects, we really can only argue them on the technical grounds that legal errors may have been made in the process of making those decisions. That really is a very narrow kind of way to make a legal argument. And it means we can't really bring the evidence of things like climate change and other environmental impacts. You know, the science that we know is so strong on these issues. That's not really relevant to the court's considering of these issues. Or it's very difficult for us to bring them into those to those procedural arguments. So, yeah, we have had, had to run these cases on very narrow kind of legalistic grounds. That's different from other countries. And you mentioned the French case where there was a lot of science actually brought before the court to demonstrate that inaction on climate change by the French government was actually causing harm to the French people. And in France, there's in the French legal system, the government has a duty of care to its population and more broadly to protect them from impacts of things like climate change. And the court found that the government hadn't been, you know, properly discharging that duty of care. So, look, it may be that cases like that can be brought in Australian law in the future, but there haven't been precedents for things like that. We continue to work on that, and the Environmental Defenders Office and others continue to seek those legal opportunities. But in the meantime, we have to bring much more conventional cases, which are much more constrained to technical legal definitions.
Another way to help out the oil and gas companies is to not bother enforcing approval conditions.
In the case of Gorgon LNG facility on Barrow Island, Environment Minister Stephen Dawson has refused to place enforceable limits on the amount of carbon pollution or require the company to provide real-time reports. Are there injunctions or mandamus injunctions that you can try and impose on the minister? Or is it also a matter of funds to be able to take these court cases?
Look, these legal challenges and court cases are very difficult for environment groups to run for a range of reasons. Firstly, you have to have standing before the court, which is sometimes difficult to get, even though we have a lot of expertise in these areas. And then there's also the potential for very significant costs to be awarded against us. That means we would have to pay our court costs. Not just for ourselves, but if we're not successful with the case, we will then have to pay the costs potentially of the government and Woodside and others as well. So we're talking about the risk of hundreds of thousands of dollars to run these cases. So we do need the support of the community in making donations and supporting us to be able to do that. And this is an important principle in Western Australia about allowing access to environmental justice for not just environment groups, but others like traditional owners and members of the community who have a right to access the environmental justice and the court proceedings, but sometimes can't afford to do so. So there are some of the barriers. Your question about whether there's potential legal grounds to challenge the approvals that have been given in relation to the to the Barrow Island situation. That's a long story. I mean, the carbon sequestration that was supposed to be occurring on Barrow Island still isn't working. And the minister hasn't done anything to enforce those conditions to require Chevron to undertake that. The minister also hasn't done anything to require the company to produce alternative offsets, which is written into their original ministerial conditions. They could actually be investing now in renewable energy or planting trees or a range of other things which would create a lot of jobs for West Australians and also control that carbon pollution. But the minister's declined to enforce those conditions or to require the company to do that. That's very frustrating to us, and we'll continue to work on that and continue to try and get those conditions enforced. Of course, the other thing is the lack of disclosure about what's actually happening on Barrow Island. It was actually taxpayers that funded part of that carbon sequestration project there, a trial project, which was considered very risky at the time. And I think as taxpayers and as people who've contributed to this project in subsidies to Chevron, essentially, we have a right to know what's going on and whether it's working or not, and whether the carbon is leaking out of the ground into the seabed, and whether that project is actually going to be viable or not. The gas industry and the Morrison government continue to talk up carbon capture and storage. They use various different words for it as a solution to allowing the gas industry to keep expanding and also getting our carbon under control. So it's really important that we know what's going on with these trial projects, and we've got some level of transparency to make, you know, some judgments about whether that's a viable proposition. In our view, it's not a viable proposition. We shouldn't be relying on these kinds of technologies to allow further expansion of polluting industries. We actually need to stop that expansion. There may be some cases where carbon capture and storage can be applied to existing operations to get their emissions down, but we need to know whether that's going to work or not. And so we need proper transparency and reporting about those projects that are underway. And unfortunately, the minister has declined to require the company to report regularly and transparently about those operations. So The only reason why we know that they're not working is because people have put in freedom of information requests and have been making attempts to get access to this information, and slowly some of it started to come out. Otherwise, we would have no idea what's going on Barrow Island. But the other project that was approved is also interesting, because that's a new gas-fired power station for Twiggy Forrest's company, FMG. And it's interesting timing, because Andrew Forrest has been lecturing Australia with his Boyer lectures about the need to be taking action on climate change and how it's going to be profitable to do so. We certainly agree with that, and we think that those statements that he's been making are certainly on the money. But at the same time, his company is about to develop a quite polluting gas-fired power station that will contribute millions of tons of emissions to a problem that we already have, that we need to reduce emissions. And really, we think that's not a consistent kind of approach from that company. There are alternatives. They can power those projects with renewable energy. Doing that would create many more jobs for West Australians, and I think make them a more competitive business in the future, because they would be able to sell iron ore and their mineral products with less of a carbon footprint. So we just urge that, even though the minister's approved this project now, that FMG and Andrew Forrest actually take another look at it and look at those real alternatives, and instead invest in a renewable energy and clean energy solutions to power their industry. Interestingly, the EPA's new climate policy, its policy objective is to reduce emissions, and it sets out to do that by requiring proponents to demonstrate that they're taking all reasonable and practicable measures to reduce emissions and to avoid emissions. It is very reasonable for them to be powering these projects with renewable energy instead. Many other projects are now doing exactly that. And I just saw the other day that BHP has announced a big renewable energy project to power its nickel mining operations. So these solutions are practicable, they are reasonable, and they are things that can actually create thousands of jobs for Western Australians, many more than are created in the gas industry, because the gas industry is actually our smallest employer and the least efficient way to create employment per dollar of investment. So we made those kinds of arguments, and the minister, as I say, has put in place conditions requiring them eventually to offset their pollution and to get to net zero. But in the meantime, there's very little that's required in the short term. And so really, not only does that go against the EPA and the government's policy position of reducing emissions and requiring all reasonable measures to be taken, but it also goes against the government's commitments to create employment and jobs for Western Australians.
Conservation Council Director Piers Verstegen is talking to Understories' Adrian Glamorgan.
Really, what these decisions show is that the minister and the government are putting the profits of the gas industry ahead of the interests of Western Australians. They're placing more importance on the profits of the gas industry than, for example, those affected by bushfires and the firefighters that are trying to fight our fires. And also, they're placing more importance on the maintaining the profits of the gas industry, even than creating employment and jobs for West Australian working families. So we're pretty disappointed by that. We think that there are much better solutions that can be implemented, and we need to have a proper public discussion about these things. So releasing these sorts of approvals in a way that stifles that public discussion and means that there's very little transparency around it, in our view, is very unfortunate.
Thanks to Adrian Glamorgan and today's guest, Executive Director for the Cons Council of WA, Piers Verstegen. And tune in next week when there'll be more to explore on Understory, radio for the planet. I'm Elizabeth Poe. That's all we have time for on today's broadcast. Hop online, stream the latest and past Understories, and subscribe to our podcast.